This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, and it is glorious, and I feel so sorry for all the people who live up north where it is still cold. Boy, oh boy, this is exciting. Another program from a remote location. Today, I might have problems, so you just all have to understand it, because my normal sort of closet where I could hide in, the people next door apparently have some kind of a problem because they are banging away over there. And so I had to move to the other side of the condo, and I'm actually sitting by the windows and looking out at how beautiful it is. So beautiful here. There are boats, and it's just so gorgeous, and I wish all of you could be, if you are in quarantine, this is the place to be, because I'm looking out, there are sailboats and palm trees, and it's gorgeous, and the birds are singing, which I really don't need the birds to be singing so loudly today, but I am thrilled that I'm going to be talking now to somebody who, you know, I've had a lot of experience with lawyers. I can't say I love lawyers, but I do love lawyers who turn to writing. And there have been so many absolutely fantastic lawyers who make great writers. So I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Jacqueline Friedland. Hi.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you for having me today.
Okay. Well, as I said, this is a strange thing. I've got noises going on around me. Probably the refrigerator is going to go. I've got my husband's phone next to me, and I cannot figure out how to turn it off. So, in a way, I'm almost going to be turning this program over to you. I won't be talking as much as I normally do, because I do like to talk a lot. But what I'll do is I just want to introduce you. I want to tell everybody that, of course, you are a lawyer. And, you know, you guys and gals are such overachievers. You just can't, you know. Billable hours aren't enough. You have to also write books. And you are fantastic. You are really, really good. And so you follow in the footsteps of people like John Grisham and Marjorie Liu and Meg Gardner, who's been on Joy on Paper. So I want to welcome you, you know, to the program and to talk about your book and to... I'm going to let you sort of introduce it more than I would normally, and it's called That's Not a Thing. So why don't you explain to people about it, and then at some point I'll come in after a little while, but feel free to talk as much as you want.
That's a dangerous...
There's a jury out here. My listeners will be your jury today. So let's do your big spiel, whatever you have to tell us about That's Not a Thing.
Sure. So That's Not a Thing was released 2 weeks ago today. It's contemporary fiction about a young woman who, like I used to be, is an attorney, and she is on the cusp of sort of the beginning of everything in her life. She's engaged to be married. She's kind of up and coming at her law firm, and she goes out to celebrate her engagement to her new fiancé and is floored to discover that the owner of the restaurant that they're celebrating at is none other than her first fiancé, who ghosted her after a really catastrophic breakup several years earlier, and he then disappeared on an open-ended journey to Europe. And when she sees him again, she's hit by a wave of all these complex emotions that she thought she had put behind her, and thus begins a very conflicted or conflict-filled journey where she has to sort of decide who she is, what she wants from her career, what she wants from her romantic life, what she wants from her family relationships. And as the emotional build increases, she makes more and more of a mess of things until everything comes to a head, and eventually she has to figure out how to work it out.
And it's quite a treat for the reader, because, you know, I love, first of all, I love stories about these things that happen in life that are unexpected. And it does happen, and it's funny how, living here in Florida, every once in a while I will be somewhere. I will be at an event, you know, because now I'm talking to quite a few different groups. And I will be at an event, and someone will come up and look at me, and they'll look at me, and they'll say, oh, do you remember me? And I'm like, oh, please, I hope I remember them. You know, it's only been 40 years or something. you look exactly the same, George.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we, as we age, as people, we've sort of all lived these full lives, and the people that we meet come and they go, and a lot of those relationships, you never really have closure, or you don't exactly know why a relationship ended or what happened to a certain individual. And those questions, I think, sort of live in the back of people's minds for quite some time. And that's one of the themes that I was interested in when I began this book. And in fact, a story that sort of inspired the entire book for me is something that I grew up hearing throughout my childhood. Now and again, I always knew that my mother was engaged to a different man before my father. She had dated her high school sweetheart for years, you know, throughout high school and following through college and beyond, and they had been engaged to be married, and they broke their engagement 3 weeks before the wedding because his parents had been in a plane crash, and his father actually died in the plane crash. The plane crashed into the water, and everyone on the plane managed to survive except for this guy's father, who had not been wearing his seatbelt, and he hit his head. And my mother's fiancé blamed her family for the plane accident and the death, because the reason his parents had been traveling is because there had been some stressful situations in the wedding planning, and they decided that once everything was settled, they wanted to take this trip before the wedding to kind of decompress and get ready. And it just, it took my mother and her fiancé to a place they couldn't come back from. And eventually, after a long struggle, they ended up breaking their engagement. And it sort of always has been this question in the back of my mind, like how crazy that is and whatever happened to that guy. And so I sort of, that was the seed from which my whole book grew. And, you know, the facts in my story are, first of all, they're contemporary, and this happened to my mother, you know, in the 70s. And second of all, they're totally a different fact pattern, but it's the same general idea, and that sort of spurs on the rest of the story that grows out of that kind of tragic accident and family strife.
Well, you know, one thing I love about the book, it's set in Manhattan. I have a real penchant. I love books set in Manhattan. It's like I had, you know, I always sort of imagined myself living in Manhattan. Not that I could live in Manhattan, because when I was there last time, it drove me crazy. And I'm glad I'm not living there now. I don't know. People are living in apartments and are, oh, it's frightening, you know, to think of people in quarantine in apartments in New York. But I love that you do have a great sense of place, and you really, you know, you take us there, which is a wonderful ability.
Thank you. You know, when I was writing the book, I actually, that sort of was completely unintentional. They happened to be in the city, and so as they'd go from place to place, I would, you know, be talking about where they were. And once the first draft was finished, I went back through it and sort of realized, like, wow, you know, New York City has really become a character here, which was an unintended benefit, I guess, of having lived and worked there myself for many years. I now live about 30 minutes north of the city, but close enough to visit frequently, but happily not living there at the moment.
Well, as I said, you write so beautifully about the city, and I really felt like I was back there. Another author who did that for me is Jill Block, who wrote The Truth About Parallel Lines. And also set in Manhattan, and in that book, she mentioned so many of the restaurants where my husband and I used to go when we made business trips to New York. So I love that. Now, tell us about the characters, because you've introduced here a subject that actually, you know, a very timely subject.
I'm not sure which subject you're getting at.
Well, you know, the entire thing about, how can I say, you know, Meredith is, she's a strong person. And then when, you know, she's about to marry Aaron, but why, when you introduced Wesley, what was this things that go on with him, the diagnosis of ALS, which is something that's very timely at this point. So many people are talking about it and are concerned about it. Where did you have this involvement with it?
So that's actually, a lot of people have been asking me if I have a personal connection to ALS, and the fact is I do not. However, I do have a connection to having family members suffer illnesses, and I understand the fear and the devastation that can come from that. And I wanted to bring attention to an illness like ALS that, you know, currently has no cure and that is just devastating for the people and the families and the caregivers who have to help people who struggle with the disease. And, you know, it's sort of, when people are confronted with their own mortality, it changes the decisions that they make. When you know that you don't have forever to work out, you know, your issues with a certain person or your issues with yourself, the choices that you make are different. Everything is so much more immediate, and you're so focused on, you know, your limited time that it really, it lights a fire under you, and it lights a fire under the people around you. And so I hope that the book brings attention to ALS and some additional awareness. You know, there was the ice bucket challenge a few years back, which was a great thing. But since that time, I've not heard so many people talking about ALS. And so I do hope that it brings more attention to the disease, because the research and the organizations that work on behalf of these people and their families could really use additional resources and help.
That's true, and it is a subject that people, you know, down here in Florida, you know, we have a lot of sports people, a lot of people who retired, and you know, from various big leagues and big, you know, champions, and we happen to know quite a number of them actually who have ALS, and so I thought it was a you know, very interesting that you use that, and I think it does bring awareness, and that is important.
Well, I've always been, my whole life, I've been a lover of fairy tales and happy endings, and the fact is that, you know, not everything in the real world has a happy ending, and ALS is one of those things that there's no happy ending, you know, and which is not to say that my book has not a happy ending. I have to interrupt myself. You know, nothing is perfect is basically a part of the message in the book and a part of my general approach to life, that, you know, the good, you always have to remember that there are flaws and there are things that can't be fixed, and then you have to do the best that you can with what you've been given.
Well, I think that, first of all, you've gotten some really lovely coverage for this book, and I think that you know, it's going to do very well, and I'm sure people are thinking, you know, when is it going to become a movie? I remember when the first time I talked to JoJo Moyes, I said, you know, your book's going to be a movie, and she said, no. She said, I think so. So it's always exciting when I come upon a book that I think should be made into a film. It would make a fascinating film.
Love that.
and these things happen, and it's the kind of book, it has all the elements, and as I said, it's touching in so many ways, and it does, I think, probably too, because of the ALS tie-in, it does lend itself nicely to promotion as a you know, as a film. So I will keep my fingers crossed for you that you'll get it noticed.
Thank you. Thank you. I can say one thing that was interesting while writing the book was that there is a refugee that is applying for political asylum, and Meredith, the protagonist, is representing him as a pro bono case that her law firm has permitted her to take on. And as I was writing the book, immigration laws were changing in the real world in real time. And that was one complicating factor as I continued to write the book. But I thought that it was an interesting thing also, in addition to the ALS, to highlight as an issue facing people who are in our country or coming into our country, and the way that laws are changing and evolving, and how you have these three New Yorkers dealing with their lives in very difficult situations, but then when you contrast them with a refugee from Myanmar and what he's dealing with, it sort of puts everything into a whole new perspective. So that was just one other element that I wanted to mention.
Well, of course, you mentioned that you love reading, and the name of the program is Joy on Paper, and that's what I've been telling people all during this quarantine time. If you aren't a person who's already found that joy on paper, either reading or writing, you're in trouble. You're just watching reruns. So this is a wonderful time for people to read. And what books would you recommend to people in quarantine there? What, in addition to your great new book, which has been on sale for 2 weeks, and it's called That's Not a Thing. I'm just reminding everybody. And you have a website, that's just your name, right? Jacqueline Friedman. So, but what would you recommend people read?
So, you're making me laugh. I once told my husband that I thought of the best job for myself, that I should be somebody who gets to know people a little bit and then recommends books for them sort of on a curated level. And he said to me, "You mean like a librarian?"
Or Patsy with a Z.
So I love to read, as you can imagine. And when this whole quarantine started, I actually, for the first time in decades, could not get into a book. I think I was just so stressed and nervous and so fixated on the news that I couldn't get my fix of books, and it was just making everything worse for me. And somehow the book I picked up that got me out of that slump was Dear Edward by Anne Napolitano, which is not, it's not a light book, but it somehow pulled me in, and it's beautifully written, and I would definitely recommend that, with the caveat that there are some, if you have a fear of flying, it might not be the book for you. A couple other ones, if you want something lighter, I just read The Grace Kelly Dress by Brenda Janowitz, which I thought was terrific. It was, it's about three generations of women, who share the same wedding dress. And, a couple others, American Dirt, I read right before quarantine started and really enjoyed that.
And what are your kids reading? Are they home with you?
I have four kids who are home with me. I actually, I was laughing when you were talking about hiding in the closet, because I'm doing just the same thing right now. I have four, a high schooler, two middle schoolers, and a third grader, all trying to do distance learning at the moment from their schools.
I hope that they like to read.
I wish they liked to read more than they do. The three older ones are boys, and all they want to do is be outside with a basketball. My youngest is a girl, and she just finished her first Judy Blume book and liked it, and I was so excited. And now she's actually in the other room reading Ramona Quimby, age 8. And I'm having so much fun reliving my childhood books through her.
Well, it really is wonderful. And if you cannot sort of get into a book, this is a good time to think about writing a book and doing the research, because research is fantastic. It really can keep your mind busy.
That is for sure. I can speak to that in saying that my first book is historical fiction, and when I was doing the research for that, oh my goodness, would I go down rabbit holes that had nothing to do with what I needed to write. My favorite was when I stumbled upon how they make perfume, which there is completely irrelevant to the book that I wrote. But hours I was reading up on that, and every day you have to sort of pull yourself back and say, this is not what you're here for, focus, you know.
But that's part of the fun. It is just so much fun to get lost in research. And you never know. One little thing can sort of set you off and send you out, as you said, for hours. And it's fun. And in the end, one day you'll probably use whatever you read. You know, it'll come back to you.
Yes, for sure.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on today. I think you have another one of these overachieving lawyers who just can't have enough, and you certainly are doing a beautiful job with your writing, a natural talent. And Jacqueline Friedland, people can go to your website, and people can go to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever books are sold, and get it and enjoy a good read. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm sure you're working on the next book.
I'm trying the four.
Okay, so I'll probably have you back in a year. Okay.
Oh, thanks so much.
Okay, stay well during this quarantine.
You too.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye now. Okay, we'll do. Let's do a little book buzz from Rita Moreau. And this one is for Laura Resnick. Now, this is a book, I can tell you, it's so strange and so different that you will forget time and just read it. It's a easy read, quick read, but it'll put a smile on your face because Laura Resnick writes them. She's a little bit silly, and it's called The Doppelgangster. So here's a book buzz from Rita Moreau, then we'll go to commercials, and I'll be back in a little while.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. And A Doppelgangster is the exciting science fiction and fantasy second novel of the Esther Diamond series by Laura Resnick. Here's the buzz. Esther Diamond, the New York actress, is resting between roles by working as a singing waitress at a Manhattan mob restaurant because, well, wise guys tip well. Then duplicated gangsters appear, bullets start flying, and it's up to Esther and her friend Max the Magician to fight evil by stopping the gang war before it starts killing the wrong people. And if she has time, maybe Esther can actually keep a hot date with her hunky detective friend Lopez, who doesn't believe in magic yet. Laura Resnick introduces a colorful cast of gangsters and their associates as she spins a witty, fast-paced mystery around her convincingly self-absorbed chorus girl heroine. Unplug all your devices and settle down for a fast and funny read with Laura Resnick's Doppelgangster. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. Hey, for more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Christy with a Z, and I am back, and I'm ready to talk to my next guest, Rufy Thorpe. But first, I want to remind everybody, be safe out there, wash your hands, keep your social distances, and just be careful, be careful. And because it's very funny, you don't hear the word corona very often unless you drink beer. And now everybody hears that, and Rufy's first book had that in the title. Hi, Rufy.
Hi.
How are you?
Having me. I'm doing right.
Okay. Well, your new book is called The Knockout Queen, and I'm so happy that you could join me today to talk about that. But it was funny when I was, you know, reading about you, and I discovered that your first book, which was long-listed for the International Dylan Thomas Prize, that, wow, that's something, and 2014 Flaherty Dunnan First Novel Prize, whoa, and then, you know, that one is called The Girl from Corona, Del Mar. So I can imagine people are, you know, searching now for books about Corona.
Yeah, what if it comes up?
Yeah, they go, good. It'll be a pleasant surprise because they really don't need to read the details of this horrible thing that's happening to us. They'll much prefer reading your book. I think The Girls from Corona Del Mar is great. And once I, as I said, I got The Knockout Queen. They sent it to me, and then once I did that, I said, well, then I have to check something else out. And so I'm very, you know, very happy that you were able to join me today. I am in a remote location here in what could turn out to be a very noisy location. I never know. and I'm surprised the lawnmower hasn't gone out underneath my window. So I apologize for any mess, but in case noise starts happening on my end, I'm going to let you do a lot of the talking. So why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and your book, sort of do the spiel, the story of your life and then your book, so that I don't have to worry about whether somebody's going to turn the lawnmower on downstairs. Okay? And I'll pop in every once in a while, but not as much as I normally would.
Okay. So I'm, again, Rufy Thorpe, and this is my third novel, The Knockout Queen. And it's a book about an unlikely friendship, kind of, between two high school students. And so one of them is Bunny Lampert, and she is a star volleyball athlete. And she, by the end of high school, is 6'3", 200 pounds. And her dad is a top real estate agent in the town. And then her next-door neighbor is a vaguely goth boy who's a straight-A student and works at Rite Aid after school and has a secret Grindr account. And so on the surface, it doesn't seem like they would have a lot in common, but they actually have kind of everything in common. And then Bunny, who's the girl, does something on impulse and basically hits somebody. And then this causes this wave of consequences for them. So it's a lot, it's a book about sort of the unruliness of the body and, you know, wanting things you wish you didn't want and doing things you didn't mean to do and loving people you wish you didn't love, all those kind of ways that we are helplessly ourselves.
Well, it does have a complicated sort of plot line, and I think for a lot of people at this time, that's the kind of thing that you want to get lost in. You're reading and you get carried away with the characters and you forget for a little while all the mess in the outside world and concentrate on the mess inside the book. And there's some mess up in there, but you write beautifully about it. And where did you get the idea for this story?
Well, I mean, I think there were a lot of layers to the idea. I first had the idea of a character named Bunny who was really big and strong and a boxer like 10 years ago. And I wrote a whole novel about her that has never seen the light of day. But she's just been in the back of my mind all these years. And then when we were first moving to El Segundo, where we live now, there was this one real estate agent that seemed to be representing like every house in the town. I thought, who must this guy be? His name is everywhere. He's got to have like 50, 60 houses listed. And I just thought, I wonder what it's like to have that guy be your dad. And so those two things sort of came together as my idea of Bunny. And then I was working on the book and working on the book, and it wasn't coming together. And it was really only once I found Michael and started telling it from his point of view, all of a sudden everything sort of clicked. And I knew that I had wanted to write about violence and about, like, women being violent. My friend worked at a domestic abuse hotline, and the story that she kept coming back with over and over was of women who would wind up kind of in a altercation with their spouse or with their partner and then, like, hit back and kind of have the book thrown at them. Whereas, you know, it's just seen as much more aberrant if a woman is violent than if a man is violent. If a man's violent, then he just lost control, but the underlying impulse is sort of considered, like, natural and maybe even healthy. But when a woman displays the same behavior, it's viewed as unnatural and aberrant and, like, a sign that something's deeply wrong with her. And so I really wanted to kind of explore that cluster of issues. And the other thing that's weird about that is that it's, like, a very funny book. It's, like, a very, very darkly comic book. And so hopefully that, I mean, I wanted it to be a book that you could escape into. That's the kind of book that I love to read as a reader, so...
Well, it does. It is some of it is very, very, very funny. So you know, good comedy timing is always important, and you have that in your book here. And I was thinking of, you know, well, right now are you able to write during this quarantine? Are you in quarantine? Where are you? What part of California?
I'm right near L.A., right near the L.A. airport, and we're in quarantine, and school's canceled for the rest of the year. I have two kids, almost 5 and almost 8, and, you know, we're just trying to do schoolwork and make the days go by. I haven't really been trying to write, but I'm in more of, like, the research and reading phase for the thing I'm writing next, and so it's actually a really wonderful time to be reading, because you can, you know, you can have books delivered to your house. I don't know if you knew, but it's very convenient. And then I'm just playing with kids and reading all day. It's been kind of idyllic, as long as I don't read the news. And then, you know, the kids go to bed and I read the news and I'm flooded with panic, and then, you know, I have to try and figure out how to go to bed.
Well, that's a lovely age for children, to be quarantined with children at that age. That's a perfect age.
Yeah.
I would do it. I would so love to be quarantined with children that age, because as a homeschool mom, we spent a lot of time at home, and it was just so wonderful when they were that age. That was a time where we did so much learning, because I believe in immersive learning, that a child has a time in their life when they can learn certain things. Like my older boy, he started studying math, and really he's concentrated on math for almost 3 years and didn't really care about anything else. And mm-hmm. So I let them immerse themselves. We'd take a subject, I'd take, like, let's you know, take a country or a time in history, and just let them run with it. We used to do a lot of safaris to Africa. By the time they were that age, the age of your kids, they knew all the countries and rivers in Africa, because we turned the entire house into Africa. My husband would come back and he'd say, oh, this looks nice. He'd say, where are you? I said, well, we're in Kenya right now. Of course, that was when we had all the dining room chairs upside down. We had made a boat and, you know, and did all sorts of things. That's a wonderful way for them to learn, and let them sort of decide what to learn and how much to, like, I would plant these treasure maps and treasures all around the house and clues, and they'd have to find it, but they'd have to do work. They'd have to know where they were going or what they were looking for. And they learned the Latin words.
Have to use a compass or...
Oh, yeah, and they learned the Latin names of plants and animals. Because those were my clues, and they had to look it up, and they had to find out what it was, and it really was wonderful. It kept them busy all day long. That's fun.
That is a wonderful idea. Yeah, because the schoolwork that we have to do is very...
Oh, blah, blah, blah. Forget that schoolwork. That's stupid. I'm telling you right now, don't do the schoolwork. Make them, subject. Say, let's do a country or do a thing and let them make costumes. Let them make maps. Napoleon, you can do the maps of all of his battles. You can do all the treasure that he found. You can do costumes. You can do, learn French words, make French food, be immersive. Don't do that crummy schoolwork. It's making me very angry to hear parents, oh, I'm doing the curriculum and I'm doing this and that. And then, of course, the kids hate it anyway. In the best of times, they really hate it when, you know, they're told to do it by their mom. So don't forget it. I don't know how much longer this will last, but you might have 2 weeks that by the end of 2 weeks, they'll know all about Napoleon, or they'll learn all about Africa, or they'll know all about South America. And let them just have fun. Let them make the maps. Let them make the school work. Let them make everything.
I do think that one of the things that I want to foster in my kids that this homeschooling time has really brought home to me is that he didn't have any sense of how to become curious and take charge of a project. He was so used to only being told what to do that even when we would like kind of make up creative assignments, like you get to design a city. This is something his grandma did with him. And so how do you want your city to be laid out? And he was sort of like, I don't know how to start because I'm waiting for, like, the sheet of instructions, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly why I say forget it. Forget all. I throw all of those papers away and just say, go for it. Find a subject, find a person, find a period of time, and let them just go for it. And, you know, it's like one of the things you can teach kids. The dates of anything, if you put the dates on cookies. If you want them to know 1066, okay, if you want them to know 1941, 1918, if you want them to know all these dates, cookies. You make cookies and you write, you know, with frosting, the dates. And they cannot eat that cookie until they can give you some facts about that date. Believe me, they learn so fast. And I used to do that with, I homeschool, so my boys knew the dates to everything. But the neighbor kids would come over, and I'd say, yeah, well, you know, and the cookies look great, and it's 1941. I say, well, yeah, what happened in 1941? Oh, yeah, well, in 1941, you know, they didn't know anything. Believe me, they had to study. They had to go and look it up, and, you know, at that time, we still had children's encyclopedias, real books, but they had to look up things, and that's the only time they got a cookie. You can do that with the whole dinner, as a matter of fact.
Absolutely.
You don't eat. make it your husband, too. Everybody has to know some, give a fact about something before they can eat it. You see?
I love it.
It's simple, and it's fun, and it takes the stress out of this. Oh, see, look at that phone is ringing. I knew it. You know, that's my husband's phone. I don't know how to turn his phone off. I'm walking around the house. I suddenly realized as I was starting the program, I have in one hand, I have his phone. In the other hand, I have the bed beeper. Now, why would I have the bed beeper? I mean, you think I'm going like a little bit cuckoo? I've been in quarantine a long time here. Why am I carrying the bed beeper? I don't know. Yeah, so, but you're lucky. I will tell you, you're very, very lucky to have two kids with you. So make this the happiest time. I'm going to take my time now to tell you that. Make this the happiest time in their lives. When they look back 40 years from now, they'll say, my mom and my family, they just made it so much fun. Can't we go in quarantine again? So, this is what you have to do, and you have the perfect age because they talk and they can come up with so many wonderful things. So I'm jealous. I wish I'd take the two of them in a minute. Well, and meanwhile, everybody should just get your book. It's called The Knockout Queen. And I like your name, Rufy Thorpe. That's a nice name. I like your website, too. Really nice. Cheerful website. I like it. I thought it was really cool. I really like it.
Oh, thank you.
And so everybody, I think it's wonderful, and you can get it on wherever books are sold, and as you said, books are being sent to the house even. And and I guess your tour has been officially canceled because you're not going out anywhere, but you're going to be in the house having fun with the kids and just immersing yourself in the joy of, you know, it's really the joy of watching their minds work as you let them run, as you let them, and forget those stupid pages that the teacher sends you and forget those stupid assignments. Let them run, and you'll be so amazed at what they can learn and what they can start teaching you. By the end, you know, as I'm homeschooling my boys, they taught me much more than I taught them. I learned from them. It was an education for me, and make it into a fun time. I wish I could get to more people. I was going to get on a television show and just tell people, because I've heard about these terrible stories where parents are getting very bent out of shape. And this is not the time to be bent out of shape. This is a time to find that joy of learning and just go with it, flow with it, and think of all sorts of silly and crazy and wonderful things you can do. And this should be a joyous time. You have, and whenever you can be with your kids is joyous, because 20 years from now, when they're off and away, and you're like, where are they? What are they doing? You will look back and you'll say, I had this opportunity. The quarantine gave me the opportunity to spend real quality and joyous time with my kids. And I hope all my listeners out there who are struggling, and so many are, really, they found it as a struggle, but partly it is because they were given these worksheets, and I hate worksheets, but particularly it's not the way to learn. And so I'm just telling you, have fun with it, okay?
All right, thank you so much.
Okay, well, good luck with the book, and as I said, you're a great writer, and I'm sure we'll have another. You're doing research on the next one, and I'll have you back, and maybe then you can tell me some of the fun things you did with your kids. As a matter of fact,
I would love to.
This is a wonderful opportunity for you to actually write a book with the kids. Each of you should be writing a page a day, a couple pages a day. I don't know, do you have Scrivener?
Yeah.
Scrivener is the most wonderful, wonderful program for writing a book with kids, because you each get you get a section, and each day they can add a section. They can add, it might be a sentence or two sentences, but later on, because they're at the age where they can put things down on paper, wow, it's wonderful. And you can add drawings, you know, with Scrivener, you can do that, and you can publish your own book so nicely, and that will be a joy forever. So that's what you should be doing. Have the kids.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. That turn this into a fun time, and to have a family book, and you doing you can do the nitty gritty part about all that's going on. But it's a valuable tool. You know, historians will look back and they'll want to know what it was like. And if you have it from your perspective, and then from the kids' perspective and your husband's perspective, and then you can have your, you know, family each send in a chapter, and you put it in the Scrivener, and in no time you can just, you know, do it up yourself, Mobi it and EPUB it, and the entire family can have a book about themselves.
That's a really wonderful idea. I would have so loved if my grandmother had put together something like that with my mom.
Yes, exactly. So that's what you're going to do now with your kids. Stop the stupid phone. I give up. I'm going to say goodbye to you now, because I have to figure out how to turn off this phone. But I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you.
Okay. Rufy Thorpe, and her webpage is Rufy Thorpe. Look at that. Are you still there, Rufy? Oh, my goodness. Look at this. I can't turn this phone off. Why? I like Apple phones. I don't understand these Samsung or whatever they are. Anyway, it was really nice to talk to Rufy, and I like her website. Lately, I've really tended to appreciate sort of colorful websites, and everybody got sort of too dull, and I'm thinking of if I had that time and energy, I'd change my website and make it more colorful, because I love it. It pops. So anyway, her name is Rufy Thorpe, and she's an excellent writer, and it was so nice that she joined me today. And I wanted, again, to go over a few books that I think that you will really enjoy. For any of you who have not, I'm pushing C.J. Box for a reason, because I like the guy. You know, I just like the guy so much, and he's just such a nice person. And more and more, it's funny because, you know, we live here in Florida, but we don't really see a night sky. We don't see the stars. And I didn't realize how much I missed seeing the stars until I was reading C.J. Box. Now, I come from northern Michigan. Of course, we have the skies we have up there at night. It's unbelievable. And, of course, we have fireflies. A night in northern Michigan is absolutely wonderful. But, you know, here we don't have stars. I don't see any stars. It's like I see some planet, and I think Venus, and some stupid star every once in a while, and that's it. And the rest are lights from the hotels. So somehow C.J. Box just writes about the sky and the open country. And I imagine that everybody out there, anybody who's living in the city today, is really going to rethink, if you ever land up being in quarantine again, would you like to have a backyard? Yes, I think so. I think you really would, because I can't imagine the people in Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens, and those people who live in tall buildings, what they are doing. I would go absolutely crazy. To go in an elevator of more than one floor, I go one floor. Even going to the third floor bothers me. But can you imagine? I heard that in some of these buildings, they're going up one person at a time. So you have a 20-story building, one person at a time, you have quite a weight. And so the thought of it makes me crazy. So read C.J. Box, really do. And again, Peter Riva, his books set in Africa are so wonderful, so fantastic. And his main character, whose name is Mbuno, who is an African guide. Now, through my life, I've read lots of books, and there are characters that just stay with me and that I get to know, and I feel like I could turn around, and if they were standing there, I'd recognize them and I'd be talking to them. And that's what I feel about Mbuno, who is the main character in Peter Riva's books. He has Death on Safari, Murder on Safari, and of course, you know, my mind went, I've been too long at this, but his books are wonderful, and the last name is Riva, and again, these are books that will take you into another dimension. And I want to take a minute, too, and I mentioned it the other day, my goddaughter, Kanisha, it was her birthday, and the days just blended one into another, and I missed her birthday, I miss her, I wish that, you know, I had hoped that we'd get together and go out to lunch and just have a good time, and now we have to wait. She won't be another year older, although it feels like it, as we wait out this time. But I do want to say, Kanisha, thank you so much for everything. Thank you for your messages, and thank you for just being such a special person. Ganesha is one of those people. She's a young woman who is a giving person. She is always thinking about others. She does, we can't call it charity work. She, you know, in ladies clubs, we like to say we do charity work. But Ganesha does more than that. She puts her heart and soul into the work that she does for other people. She lives it, and she is just such a warm and giving person. So she's something special, and I'm very, very proud to know her and very thankful that I met her through Joy on Paper at the very, very first speech that I did. And I do love speaking now. I love going to give speeches, and I'm hoping that in the near future I will be able to do that again. But meanwhile, anyway, I know that we're getting to the end of the program. Again, also, I want to thank Rita Moreau for taking over the other day. She was fantastic. She's a new star, and I'm going to have her come into the studio, and we'll have her who is that? Johnny Carson and my goodness. Anyway, we'll be a team. More like Lucy and Ethel, probably. We'll bang our heads on the microphones or something funny like that. But she's wonderful, and so I look forward to having her. Once we can get out of quarantine and we can actually be around people again, to have her come to the studio, and we'll do some joint interviews, because she's enthusiastic about promoting authors as I am, and I hope that. You know, we will be there soon. Meanwhile, I do want to remind everyone that what I always say, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those words, those very magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry, who I know is very, very busy working on her next Witch City mystery, because that's what she does. That's once you have this joy of writing, it can't stop. You just live it, and it becomes part of your life. So I want to thank everyone, and mostly I want to thank Big Ed in the control room. Thanks, Ed, for controlling everything. He's the controller, and particularly right now when we're all, like, going crazy, and I'm holding on to my bed beeper. I don't know why. Was that a sign? I need to go back to bed, I guess. Anyway, everybody, be careful, take care, distance yourself, but stay in contact with your loved ones, because that's the most important thing. In the end, the people you love. Bye-bye now.